There has been very little actual serosurveillance or surveillance of infectious virus in feral swine. My team has looked at this a little bit, very small numbers of pigs that have been sampled, and we've never detected a Japanese encephalitis virus itself. One of the big challenges that we have is that this virus is so similar to West Nile virus and St. Louis encephalitis virus, which are endemic in much of the U.S., that it would actually be kind of difficult to distinguish. It's an active area of research, I think, is how could we tell. And the feral swine that we've surveilled so far are about 25% seropositive for West Nile. If we actually try to differentiate that from Japanese encephalitis, we could potentially have a better idea of whether or not any of those are JE infected. My gut is they probably aren't.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Through innovative solutions, cutting-edge research, and world-class experts, Boehringer Ingelheim helps producers operate with complete confidence. Learn more at bi-animalhealth.com. Ralco, proven science, practical results.
Welcome to the Swine Health Black Belt Podcast, the latest swine health research digested for you. My name is Dr. Clayton Johnson. I'm the host of the podcast, and joining me in our podcast studios for this week's episode is Dr. Angela Bosco-Louth. Dr. Bosco-Louth is an associate professor in the Department of Biomedical Sciences at Colorado State University, and she's the director of the Animal Disease Laboratory there. Dr. Bosco-Louth comes to us with pretty extensive knowledge of zoonotic infectious diseases, particularly as it relates to livestock, humans, and wildlife. And Angela, you're here today to talk to us about some pig diseases that are zoonotic and infectious in nature, specifically Japanese encephalitis virus, which we've heard a decent about here in the last couple of years from the activity over in Australia and Asia, and then also H5N1, influenza virus, which we have also heard a fair bit about, and certainly in the pig industry we keep a close eye on. But why don't you start us off with kind of a risk assessment? As we think about risk to swine here domestically, what does our risk look like for those pathogens?
Thanks for having me, and great way to start off the questioning. I've been studying Japanese encephalitis for my entire career, so about 20 years, and the question I've always had is, why isn't it here yet? So from a risk perspective, this is a mosquito-borne disease. Much like West Nile virus, I think it's one of those, it's a matter of time before it gets here, kind of transmits to the same mosquitoes that West Nile would. Certainly has plenty of other hosts it can impact. It primarily circulates in birds in Australia and Asia, and then spills over into pigs, which can amplify. So risk assessment, I would say this is one that we just have to be on constant lookout for. There are plenty of places where it could be introduced, either via importing animals or via importing mosquitoes on accident, potentially even importing people, although we typically do not carry this virus in a way that is transmissible to other species. But it is directly impacting both human and animal health in other countries. So from my perspective, I think it's pretty imperative that we keep an eye out for it. And one of the places that I think is the most important is to look at what the wildlife reservoirs are that could actually create an infection that could then spill over into domestics. And everybody, I think, here is probably more in the know about how domestic swine are managed than I myself am. I've spent a lot of my career focusing on the feral swine problem, and I feel like that's a place where we have a potential risk right there. Certainly in Australia, feral swine have definitely been shown to carry and potentially transmit Japanese encephalitis to mosquitoes, which then I think could spill over really easily into the domestic populations. Probably primarily those pigs that are not as intensively housed as the big operations, but people that are more backyard breeders and don't have the same capacity to limit the mosquito populations within their settings. So that to me is, I think Japanese is, it's got to stay on our list, kind of top priority for prevention long term.
Do we know anything about the feral swine population today in the U.S. relative to JEV status? I mean, have we looked to verify they are naive, or is there a chance there already is some spillover into them?
Yeah, that's a great question. There has been very little actual serosurveillance or surveillance of infectious virus in feral swine. My team has looked at this a little bit, very small numbers of pigs that have been sampled, and we've never detected a Japanese encephalitis virus itself. One of the big challenges that we have is that this virus is so similar to West Nile virus and St. Louis encephalitis virus, which are endemic in much of the U.S., that it would actually be kind of difficult to distinguish. It's an active area of research, I think, is how could we tell? And the feral swine that we've surveilled so far are about 25% seropositive for West Nile. If we actually try to differentiate that from Japanese encephalitis, we could potentially have a better idea of whether or not any of those are JE infected. My gut is they probably aren't, but it would be a difficult thing to assess. And that's definitely an area that I think from a diagnostic perspective, we could probably make an impact, is try to look at those populations, survey them for both of those pathogens, and then try to see if there's a good way that we can differentiate using the serology at our disposal.
Yeah, presumably those diagnostic assays are going to be pretty important if it does spill over into domestic pigs. So probably best that we have a solution for how to evaluate that before that happens, than wait until, oh, we need those test capabilities now, and it's easier said than done.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
How about H5N1, Angela? You mentioned that JEV is maybe more of a when and not an if. And I think there's a lot of us that look at H5N1 and are somewhat surprised that that is still, not in the domestic pigs today. Why do you think we've kept it out for so long when we've seen infections in other species we didn't expect? And what are we doing right we need to continue to do?
Yeah, again, a great question. And one that I'm pretty perplexed by it. My feeling is that this is possibly another when, not if scenario. And we've seen one pig that was detected with H5N1 in Oregon a couple years ago, and I've been shocked that we haven't seen more. So we've done a few experimental studies with H5N1 in domestic swine, and honestly, they're not super susceptible. They barely shed the virus. So from a perspective of what these pigs might experience, we probably wouldn't notice it if we did have an infection in the pigs. But what worries me, of course, is mutations that could then lead to like an H1N1 pandemic event again. I think from the perspective of what are we doing right, biosecurity has got to be pivotal. One of the things that we've struggled with in our own systems within our laboratory is try to demonstrate how transmission is likely to occur. And I think interspecies is probably one of the more likely scenarios. But I don't think these pigs are susceptible to a low dose of an inoculation from H5N1. So potentially, they'd have to be experiencing a pretty large amount of virus in the environment or through some sort of an interspecies active nose-to-nose contact. So I don't think that's as common as we might experience with potentially other pathogens. And I think the risk is actually right now still fairly low that we're going to see a big problem in pigs with the current strains. If it becomes more transmissible between pigs or between mammals, I think then we'll start to have to think more about what are the ways that it's actually getting into these herds and what can we do to prevent that. And right now, with no vaccines on the horizon for any sort of domestic or animal or human for that matter, I think it's a little bit of a how do we prevent from the biosecurity and introduction perspective rather than what could we do to prevent an infection in the animals themselves.
Why is that, Angela, on the vaccine side of things? Because swine producers are used to using influenza vaccine, and I'm sure there's some folks that are listening and saying, well, why can't we just add that into, whether it's a commercial or autogenous vaccine that I'm using today? Isn't it just another strain that I can add into my killed vaccine platform today? Why is it trade that's an issue, technology? What's the barrier there?
I actually wish I knew the answer to that question, and I'm not really sure. There have been a few groups that have produced H5N1 vaccines, I believe, and Medgene is one that's done that. Okay. Not to give a plug for that, I've just seen a paper that they wrote, and I don't know why there isn't a push to license one for any domestic animals, and it could be a trade barrier if folks are looking at serology as a way to determine whether it's vaccinated versus infected. I don't think we have any vaccines that would differentiate right now, and that's potentially it. Perhaps the bigger problem is that since we're not seeing disease or massive infections in pigs, it's just not a big push from maybe not so much the industry, but from the regulators who are actually in charge of creating this vaccine and putting it out there. So it's a question I've had for a couple of years. I don't know why there's not one for birds either. It feels like we could do this. I just think there's probably more barriers than what I'm even aware of in terms of how to get that out there.
What about JEV? Do you know anything about the vaccine status of that in pigs or other species in other countries? Is there a platform we could lean on there, or would we still be starting from scratch?
The better news for that one is that there are several existing platforms platforms. Asian countries, not Australia, have used vaccination for domestic animals successfully. There is a vaccine that's been used in horses for years in China and I believe Japan. And that platform, I think, would very easily translate to pigs. I think Australia is working actively on creating either a subunit, recombinant, or an MRA type of vaccine that would be very effective in pigs. And I don't know that I've seen the latest research on that. I looked this morning and didn't see anything that was published yet, but I think that's not going to be a difficult lift. From the U.S. perspective, I think we'd be able to get emergency authorized use if we had a massive outbreak. One other potential thing to explore is, could a West Nile vaccine that's already commercially available for other species actually provide some protection? Mm-hmm. And experimentally, it does. Our lab has done a little bit of this, not published yet, but it's not 100%. So it could be maybe a Band-Aid, but not a long-term fix. But I do think the technology is there, the vaccines exist, and I think it would not be as big of a hurdle to get that out if we saw a big outbreak, especially in a large commercial operation.
At Ralco, we are built to solve the problems that matter most. We work alongside swine producers, veterinarians, and consultants to evaluate production pressures and apply our proven technologies in real-world systems to strengthen animal health, improve performance, and bring stability to the day-to-day demands of farming. Backed by research, field experience, and responsive technical support, we turn complexity into clarity so you can move forward with confidence.
Last question, Angela. We talked about Japanese encephalitis virus, and influenza. Are there any other pathogens, diseases that you think that pig producers here in the U.S. should have on our radar because of this potential spillover of a zoonotic infection?
Yeah, there's a couple that always kind of ping me, and one I'm sure everybody hears where I was, African swine fever. That to me is another when, not if, just because we've seen it close by. It certainly circulates in feral swine, which there's pretty much no way around that. So that one, I think, should always stay on our radar. And I know that's currently surveilled actively by USDA and other groups. The other one that's kind of sticking in my mind is Nipah virus, with outbreaks that have been happening in Bangladesh and elsewhere in Southeast Asia. That's a virus that's highly zoonotic, has lots of reservoir hosts potentially. We don't even know what would happen in the U.S. because our species are so different, but certainly there are bats here, and that's the primary reservoir. And then spillover into pigs could be pretty devastating if that virus gets here, as well as in the human population. So I think these are the things that we have to kind of keep on our radar, especially from a perspective of wildlife surveillance, as well as like looking at what kind of interactions are happening in the trade world with domestic swine as well.
It's fantastic information, Angela. I really appreciate you coming on and updating the audience on the risks that we have, but not just from the perspective of fear mongering, right? Like, okay, here's some practical ways we should try to continue to prevent this. And if we have a problem with it, here's the avenues that we have to try and control the disease if and when it gets here. It's very good information. I appreciate you coming on sharing that.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure. And the swine industry is, I think, one of the most proactive groups I've ever interacted with. And it's so encouraging to see people that are as engaged in kind of preventative medicine and disease prevention as any other group I've ever worked with. So thanks again for the opportunity.
Yeah, well, it's a fun industry to be a part of. And we couldn't do it, Angela, this podcast, without all the people in the industry that tune in and try to stay up to date on the latest and greatest research and technology that's out there. If you're listening and you haven't checked out our website, take a moment to go to swinehealthblackbelt.com. You can see this episode there, along with our whole catalog of, I think we're well over 100 episodes now. In fact, I think we may be over 200 episodes now. But you can check out all the previous information we've got. If you haven't, like and subscribe to the podcast so you continue to get this great information. For Dr. Angela Bosco Louth, I'm Dr. Clayton Johnson. It's been our pleasure to spend some time with you, and we hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thank you so much. You as well.